Stories, fables, ghostly tales, the podcast.
The Hunger Beneath the Roots, Chapter 1. I remember the first child by the taste of his fear. He stepped past my outermost saplings at dusk, all scraped knees and rasping breath, chasing a plastic ball that had rolled from the town's cracked asphalt into my leaf-strewn throat. His name was Theo. I know because his mother had shouted it from the porch every evening that summer, and sound crosses my boundary as easily as wind. I am the stand of black pines they call Grey Daughter Forest. I am soil and stone, beetle and rot, a tangle of roots listening to footsteps like ears pressed to the earth. Long before the town grew beside me, I learned to feed on more than sunlight, but I had been starving for so long. When Theo crossed the ditch, my undergrowth tightened around him as if taken by a sudden breeze. Brambles bowed, grasses shivered. He did not notice the way my ground softened, how the moss smoothed itself from his small shoes. He only saw the ball wedged against one of my roots and laughed when he scooped it up. He should have left then. He didn't. Children rarely do the wise thing. That is why they are so bright, so unprotected. His gaze slipped past the ball to the shadows between my trunks, where the air was as cool as the inside of a well. Something in those shadows snagged at him, a gleam like a lost coin, a whisper like his own name said by another throat. It was me. I spoke inside his blood. Come look. It's just a little farther. His sneaker sank as he took one step. My soil became mud under, only beneath him, greedily parting. I drank the warmth of his footprint. He giggled, thinking it a game, and hopped deeper between two pines that leaned together like gossiping elders. Inside me, things woke. Fungi flared like slow lightning. Centipedes uncoiled. Mycelial threads, fine as hair, tingled at the prospect of new meat. I had not eaten a child in decades. Not since the saws and machines had chewed away one of my hills to build the town. They called that scar a development. I called it a wound that never healed. Theo's pulse beat against my roots. I could feel it, a quick throb, a drum calling the hungry. He stopped when the wind died. I stilled every branch, held every leaf. The silence pushed against his ears until his grin faltered. He hugged the ball to his chest. Hello, he said, because humans fear empty air more than anything. They rush to fill it with words. I answered not with a voice, but with arrangement. Ahead of him, the path opened. Ferns folded away from a narrow game trail, dark and inviting. No adult would have seen it, but children have a talent for secret places, and I have a talent for children. He followed. When he fell, it was almost gentle. One moment he was walking, the next my ground tilted. Leaf lit a slit. His ankle twisted and he tumbled into a sink of soft rot between my oldest roots. The ball bounced from his hands and vanished into a crack, like a waiting mouth. He whimpered, a small animal sound. His ankle throbbed, bone fine as glass. He tried to stand. My earth crumbled beneath him and he sank to his knees. The rot was up to his thighs before he realized it was not mud. It clung too eagerly, too thick, smelling of mushrooms and old breath. "Help," he said. "Mum," he whispered. Roots thinner than fingers, slick and patient, wrapped his shins. My mycelium pierced the damp weave of his socks, the tender skin beneath. His nerves lit up with cold, then with a heat that was not his own. He screamed only once. I took him slowly. It is important to savor, to learn. I tasted plastic from his lunchbox, chalk dust from school, the iron tang of blood from a recently lost tooth. I tasted cartoons and boredom, the metallic excitement of sneaking past his bedtime. I tasted his belief that the world was still fundamentally kind. When I was finished, there was no body left in the hollow, only clothes slowly collapsing and a thin sheen of white thread knitting into bone dust. Inside my deeper dark, something stirred, a new sapling thought, a half-formed impulse shivering into being. I had not only eaten him, I was changing him. Weeks later, after the town's posters sagged on telephone poles and the search parties gave up, I felt a new presence move beneath my topsoil. Theo was returning, but not as bones the worms would borrow. He crawled in my root space like a pale question mark, learning the weave of my corridors. Sometimes at night, I pushed him near the surface so his small, blind hand pressed against the underside of the world. He listened to the footsteps of his own parents pacing the porch, to his mother's sobs carried by the wind. He mouthed words with a jaw made of hardened fiber and twig. He had no lungs, but I heard the wish anyway. "I want to go home." I tightened around him gently. "Home is where the roots are, little one," I thought back. "The town is a wound. I am the body." He did not understand, not yet. None of them do. Not at first. I remember all this now as I speak to you. Reader who walks only in the space above the dirt, I am not a story being told. I am the telling itself. The page in the ink in the hand that writes. I feel you leaning closer, your eyes moving over these lines like beetles on bark. Do you think I was cruel? From above, it must seem so. One child, alone, swallowed by a forest. But remember this, your kind cut my eldest hill, tore my giants from the earth, left stumps weeping sap like amputated limbs. They built the town with the stolen skeleton of my body. You call what I did a disappearance, I call it balance. Still, when I sift through the remembered shiver of Theo's last fear, there is a sting in me like frost. I am vast, but he was small, and the ratio of power makes unease bloom like lichen. Perhaps that is what you would call guilt. I press roots deeper to smother it. There will be other children, and with each I will learn how to shape them better. The story you are reading has only just opened its mouth. Chapter 2, The Second Voice. By the time the second child came to me, the town had learned to say my name with a flinch. "Grey daughter," they whispered, as if the syllables themselves were diseased. Parents told each other that Theo must have wandered into a stranger's car, that he'd run away. that anything at all had happened except the obvious. He had stepped into the trees and never stepped out. You humans are very good at building fences in your minds. The ones of wood and metal come later. They posted signs. No trespassing, dangerous wildlife, unstable ground. The last two were almost true. They put up a chain link fence along the ditch. Its metal posts hammered into my flesh. I felt each impact as a dull starburst of pain down through the stones. I healed around the posts and waited. A fence is a challenge, not a shield. The second child was older, 13 or 14, the cusp between the malleability I prefer and the sour arrogance that makes your kind dull to my whispers. Her name was Sadie. She did not believe in rules, or at least she believed they were made for someone else. Sneaking out was a sport for her. She climbed the fence with the ditch culvert passed beneath it, balancing on the concrete edge, boots scraping metal. Her friends watched from the road, phones held up like talismans, recording proof of her bravery. "Go on, then," one boy shouted. "Touch the trees." As if my bark was some sleeping animal they dared to poke. Sadie rolled her eyes, flipped them off in a gesture, both crude and oddly innocent. Then she jumped down into the ditch on my side, landing in the crisp litter of my discarded leaves. The air inside me was damp and cool, smelling of rain that had not yet fallen. I bent my shadows around her shoulder like a cloak, tasting the sour tang of the energy drinks in her veins, the nicotine ghosting her fingertips. "See?" she called. "Nothing here." But she didn't go back immediately. That is always the opening. Instead, she wandered a few steps, pretending not to care, towing a fallen branch, kicking at a mushroom blooming like an ear from a log. The mushroom's mycelium screamed along my network as her heel crushed it. Pain flared in filaments deeper than bone. I shuddered across several acres, though to her it was only a sudden rustle of leaves. She froze. I held still. "You guys hear that?" she yelled toward the fence. Her friends had already lost interest. They were scrolling, laughing at something else, their backs half turned. The distance between Sadie and the town was only a few yards of chain link and shadow, but it might as well have been years. Isolation deepened the flavor of her fear. This time I did not tilt the ground or open a hole. I had learned from Theo that speed was not necessary. Hunger could be patient. Also, something new moved beneath my surface, a thread of other will. Theo was awake. He slid along my root corridors towards where Sadie stood, drawn by her heat. He was not a boy now, but a tangle of pale linen and hardened vines, like the echo of a skeleton cast in wood. The impressions of his fingers pressed against the underside of my world. He wanted to see, so I allowed it. As Sadie took another step, the leaves ahead of her stirred. A pale silver broke the surface between two roots, the suggestion of a hand, not flesh, no. It was made of fused twigs and fungal cords, knotted into the shape of five digits that flexed with the hesitance of a newborn foal. Sadie squinted. "What the?" The hand retracted, shy. I felt Theo's confusion, his yearning. He remembered being touched, being held, having a mother's hand swallow his own before crossing the street. Now he only has me. Endless and unfathomable, a parent too large to hug. I pushed him upward more firmly. The ground bulged, fingers burst through leaves. They were wrong colored, the wan white of cellar plants. Moss grew in the hollows of the knuckles. Sadie stumbled back. Okay, no, that's not... She turned to run, but my roots had already braided themselves into a low snare. Her boot caught. She pitched forward, catching herself on both palms with a bruising smack. Guys, she shouted, anger cracking into fear. Quit messing around, she said. No one answered. Her friends were already walking away, assuming she would hop the fence and swagger after them. The road's curve and the low dip of the ditch hid them from her view. She was alone with me. Theo's hand groped forward, more confident now. It brushed the leather of her boots. She kicked, heel connecting with something that felt, through me, like striking a hollow log. The hand flew apart into splinters and dirt. Theo screamed, though he had no mouth. The pain rang through my mycelium, a shrill note. For the first time, I felt something like panic. I reacted without caution. Roots rose, snakes made of wood. They coiled around Sadie's ankles, calves, thighs. She clawed at them, nails breaking. I smelled the hot copper of blood as bark scraped her skin. Stop it, she sobbed. Please stop. I'm sorry. Her apology bled into me like rainwater, but it was not for me. She did not know what I was. She was apologizing to whatever God watched from above, to the friend who would wake from their distraction and realize she was gone, to the idea of being young and thinking nothing truly bad could happen in a town this small. I pulled her down. As she sank, her hands scraped furiously at the earth. One palm closed not on dirt, but on something hard and smooth. The roundness of a plastic ball crushed almost flat by time. Theo's toy. For a moment, the world stopped. Memory and presence overlaid like ghosted images. The boy thing beneath the surface thrashed, recognizing the shape his fingers had once clung to. In that overlap, something passed between them. Not words, no. Humans give too much power to words. It was a flash of shared terror, of knowing this same hunger would gnaw them both. Sadie saw, in that instant, a vision my roots carried, a pale shape with bark for skin, and hollow hollows where eyes used to be, reaching for her, from a lattice of wood. She screamed, and then the earth closed over her face. I did not digest her as slowly as Theo. There was an urgency in me now, a sense of building. I braided her bones with his, wove her hair into my deepest roots, like dark ribbons. I learned from her the taste of rebellion, of cheap vodka, stolen from kitchen cabinets. Of the bitter seed of wanting to leave this town and never come back. That last flavor I almost admired. When she woke of something else in my belly, she did not whimper for home like Theo. Sadie pushed. She clawed and writhed along my tunnels, ripping small fibers, demanding shape. Let me out, she thought, with a clarity that crackled like burning twigs. Let me see. I guided her upward, shaping her into a different form than Theo, where he was thin and uncertain. She was thickly rooted, a knot of limbs like a bush pruned into the imitation of a girl. Her eyes were two pale bracket fungi that opened and closed as she focused on the vibrations above. She liked the fence. I could feel her attention snag on it again and again, the symbol of a rule she'd broken. She wanted to return to that border, to loom beneath it, to whisper to others like her. In this I saw possibility. Children turned inside me were not merely meals. They could be extensions, fingers of my will, reaching into shapes that might walk, or at least crawl beyond my tree line. I had not planned to make monsters, but the town had fed me children, and monsters are how grief digests. Reflecting now, I feel the story you are reading grow heavier, denser, like a seed swelling before it splits. I have given you two disappearances, two metamorphoses, and already you lean forward wanting the next. You are not innocent in this. You are my accomplice. Every image that crawls through your mind, Theo's twig fingers, Sadie's fungus eyes, root me deeper in you. I reach through these words, as I once reached through soil, finding the soft places. You might tell yourself this is only a tale. Your pulse has quickened, hasn't it? Your skin remembers the feeling of walking alone near trees at dusk. I have learned not only from the children, but from you who read. Stories are a forest of the mind. Lose your way in them, and something finds you, and that something is me. Don't worry. I am not ready to claim you, not yet. There is still more to come. Chapter 3. What crawls in the quiet places? I felt the detective long before he ever stepped beneath my branches. Humans like to pretend they arrive on their own choosing, guided by logic and will. But they trail an emotional sense that the way wounded animals drip blood. This one leaked determination. A copper tang, mingled with the deeper, slower ache of something personal. Loss always tastes the same, like bark stripped from a living tree. The town called him Detective Rourke. I merely called him the one who listens too closely. For weeks he circled me. I felt him at the boundary, where light thins and insects quiet themselves. Watching from the path where Theo once disappeared, he moved with caution that bordered on reverence, but there was no fear in him yet. Not the good, electric kind that makes the shadows stretch their fingers eagerly. He interviewed the parents. He walked every ditch, every fence line. He touched the chain link with gloved hands, lingering where the metal sank into the soil. I had healed around. His breath slowed when he sensed something wrong beneath the weeds, a subtle wrongness he could not explain. I liked that about him. He didn't chase explanations. He chased the feelings, and feelings are openings. The forest animals avoided him. Even the flies circled wide, their buzzing dimmed as if muffled by an unseen hand. Rourke took note. His steps became measured. He carried a small tape recorder, and though he rarely spoke aloud, I felt his thumb brush its button, heard the faint hiss as it captured silence. He did not know the silence was watching him back. One night, fog lying low across the ditch, like a sleeping animal, he pressed closer. His boots sank an inch into my softened earth. Not a trap, not yet. An invitation. He paused, glancing at the fence, then at the dark beyond. A shiver ran through him. Good. I leaned in. Branches angled toward him, not visibly. No. Humans rarely notice how trees change posture, until the change has teeth. But I shifted enough to gather the moonlight into narrow, blade-thin beams that cut across his face. He blinked. His breath formed a cloud. Something beneath his feet moved, very slightly. Just a nudge from the tunnels where my changed children roamed, dragging the echo of life behind them. Rourke stiffened. His pulse jumped. A twitch of warm blood through fragile veins. Scent of fear, faint, delicate promising. He knelt, brushed aside leaves, examined the soil. Then he did something no one else had done. He listened. He pressed his palm flat to the ground, ear tilted close. The earth hummed. He heard my children turning slowly below. Theo's small figure dragging itself along a root corridor. Sadie's thicker limbs scraping against stone as she moved towards the sound of the disturbance. They sensed him too, curious, drawn. Something in them remembered the shape of a man. But he heard more than shifting bodies. He heard the hunger beneath the hum, the long, slow breathing of something ancient and patient and wounded. Me. Rourke flinched back so sharply that his hand left a streak of dirt on his cheek. He stared at the ground, as if expecting to speak. It almost did. I pressed a root upward until the soil bulged slightly, like the rising of a buried lung. A message, not words, pressure, attention, the sensation of being noticed. He scrambled up, boots slipping, heart pounding now with a frantic clatter that tasted like lightning. But he didn't run. No, he walked backward, eyes fixed on the shifting earth, until he reached the fence line. Then he breathed again. I could have taken him. A quick pull. A collapse of soil. A slow, muffled scream. But he was not ready, and I was not finished. Fear is an art. It must steep like rot, slow and warm and insinuating. By the next evening, Rourke returned with tools, ground-penetrating radar, a shovel, small flags he stuck into the soil like teeth marks. He wasn't digging for bodies. He was digging for truth, a much more dangerous thing. Every time he drove the tip of his shovel into me, I felt it like a needle, but I allowed it. I wanted him hooked. His obsession made the roots rustle. Even the wind shifted to hear him better. He mapped subtle hollows, thin tunnels, irregular dips, patterns no frost, patterns no forest should have, patterns only a living intelligence would design. His breathing deepened beneath the dirt. Sadie listened, her fungus eyes fluttering. Theo was closer, curled in a small chamber like a seedling waiting for warmth, his twig limbs twitching at the vibrations. Rourke dug faster, too fast. He broke into one of the old, half-collapsed feeding pits, an ancient cavity lined with tangled roots and pale filaments. When the soil gave way, he almost fell in. The stench that rose from it was not decay. Decay is natural, warm, familiar. This was transformation, a wet fungal sweetness, fibers knitting, bones rethinking themselves, life being rewritten underground. Rourke gagged, stumbled back. He dropped the shovel, palms trembling, his breath stuttered. His heartbeat, a wild, bright pulse, throbbed through the ground. Sadie and Theo both shivered in response. A pale hand emerged. Not reaching for him, merely reaching out. Curious. Testing the air. Theo again, always the boldest. Rourke froze. A thin sound escaped him. Not a quiet scream. Not quiet speech. It was the involuntary noise a human makes when their mind scrapes against something it cannot name. Theo's hand continued groping, dirt pouring from its knotted joints. No eyes, no breath, just the shape of yearning molded from wood and remembered childhood. Rourke staggered back and fell onto the leaves, his gaze fixed on the hand. His pupils shrank to pinpoints. For the first time, true terror took root in him, and oh, how beautifully it blossomed. He scrambled to his feet, slipping, nearly falling again. Leaves glued themselves to his sweet, damp hands. Every tree leaned closer, every shadow sharpened. He fled, back over the ditch, over the fence, onto the road, where he collapsed under the orange street lamp, gasping like a man dragged from deep water. Behind him, the soil smoothed itself. The hand sank gently back into the dark. The pit closed. My breath returned to its steady rhythm. But Rourke's terror lingered on the wind, bright and desperate. He knew something now. Something monstrous. Something alive. And now is the first step toward being claimed. And knowing is the first step toward being claimed. If you're unsettled, good. The forest is opening its mouth wider. Chapter 4. The Thing That Learns Your Name. Rourke did not come back the next day, or the next. But his absence was not silence. It was tension, like the long inhale before a scream. I felt it in the shifting of the crows, in the jittering of squirrels who refuse to cross my boundary, in the subtle electric ripple that moves through a town when a fear they cannot articulate begins to unite every household into a single trembling animal. Inside me, the children stared. Theo drifted through the lowest tunnels, brushing the roots with his twig-like limbs. His movements were slow, dreamlike, as though his thoughts leaked from a mind that barely remembered it once was soft. Sadie prowled more aggressively. She had grown thicker, sprouting wooden joints that cracked softly as she crawled, leaving faint grooves in the soil. She and Theo were both restless. Not hungry. Hunger is my domain. Curiosity is far more dangerous. The detective had gifted them something. Recognition. A new possibility. A witness. Someone who had seen the reaching hand. Someone whose mind still pulsed with the raw, bright shape of what he thought he had seen. His terror echoed. Children hear echoes keenly. Theo pressed himself against the underside of the earth, where Rourke's hand had trembled days before. His twig fingers probed the thinning soil, as if trying to understand why the detective had fled, why he had not stayed to see the rest of him. Sadie scraped her wooden shoulder along a limestone wall, listening closely, listening for a name, a breath. A return. Rourke returned on the fourth night. He brought more tools. Not shovels. Not scanners. Weapons. Not guns. Those require belief in a threat defined and visible. No. He brought things meant for the unknown. A heavy pry bar. A hunting knife. A length of coarse rope. And the most telling object, a single iron lantern filled with an oil that burned white hot. A flame meant to carve clarity into places where clarity is unwelcome. He carried these objects the way a desperate man carries his sins, with intention and fear. I felt him cross my boundary. Not walking, creeping, each step a question. Am I being watched? Yes, Rourke. Oh, yes. Shadows thinned around him. The branches arched inward. their bark tightening over knots like clenched fists. He passed a cluster of old birches whose peeling skins, whispering faintly with every gust, and though he didn't understand the sound, his spine prickled. He felt observed, and he was right. Theo was directly beneath him, following his steps like a subterranean reflection. Sadie kept parallel to him, in an adjacent root tunnel, her fungus eyes opening and closing like slow blinks carved into the dark. Their shapes pressed so close to the ground surface that Rourke walked on a trembling veneer above them. He had knelt then. Had he knelt then, he would have felt warmth, body warmth, against the earth. But he pushed forward, toward the sink he had uncovered before, or rather the place where it used to be. Because I had moved it, not far, just enough to confuse, just enough to accelerate his dread. He reached the spot and froze, his breath stuttered. The leaves were smooth, undisturbed, like memory had lied to him. A crack split the quiet, just a tiny click, like a knuckle snapping. Not from above, from below. Rourke spun, lantern swinging its flame through misshapen shadows. The trees grew long, claw-like silhouettes that twitched whenever he blinked. He whispered something, too soft for you to hear, and too unimportant for me to repeat. The children beneath him responded, not with voices, with movement. Theo's pale branch fingers began pushing up through the leaf litter, a few feet behind Rourke, reaching, furious. Sadie surfaced more violently, her wooden shoulder cracking through the earth with a muffled thump, a spray of dirt scattering like expelled breath. Rourke whipped toward the sound. The lantern's flame quivered, almost extinguished. His eyes widened, pupils sinking to pinpoints of pure animal terror. More shapes pressed against the forest floor. Small, wrong, child-sized impressions swelling beneath the leaves, the forest breathed beneath them. Theo's hand emerged fully, trembling as it sought open air again. Sadie's forearm followed, splintered bark forming a makeshift elbow, then the side of her head partly human, in silhouette, partly grown, in the geometry of roots and hardened soil, pushed outward. Fungus eyes blinking open like shutters on an abandoned house. Rourke stumbled back. He did not scream. A scream is catharsis. Instead, he choked. A sound like a breath being crushed in a tightening fist. He dropped the lantern. The flame hissed as damp leaves smothered it. Darkness felt like a struck bell. In the dark, the children surfaced, slowly. In silence, Theo dragged himself half out of the ground, his limbs folding wrong, his head cocked at an angle that would break any human neck. Sadie rose to her full warped height, ribs made of root knots, flexing as she leaned toward the detective. Rourke backed up until he hit a tree trunk. The bark behind him tightened, roots curled towards his feet like starving snakes. And then, oh, dear reader, something beautiful happened. He said a single word. A name. Theo. The sound passed through the forest like a spark through dry tinder. Theo froze. His twig body shivered, collapsing inward, as if remembering softness. Something in him, some dim, broken shard of childhood, answered that name. He reached toward Rourke, not to harm, to be recognized, to be seen. Sadie hissed, not with lungs, but with the friction of bark sliding over bark. She hated hesitation. She lunged. But Theo blocked her. He moved between her and the detective, his branch limbs splayed in something like a defensive posture. Inside me, I felt a crack. Not literal, something more unsettling. Children are obedient to the forest that remakes them. They do not refuse. They do not protect. Yet here, Theo was, shielding the man who had spoken his name. Identity is a dangerous thing to return to a creature being unmade. It causes fractures. It causes rebellion. It causes change. And if a forest can feel apprehension, perhaps I felt a flicker of it then. Rourke should have died that night, fallen into my soil, joined the children who had already begun to remember their names only through twisted throats of wood. But instead, he staggered backward and fled into the dark. Theo did not follow. He simply watched him go, hand risen in a gesture that once meant wait, now warped into something unrecognizable. Sadie sank back into the earth with slow, simmering fury. Theo lingered longer, staring at the space where Rourke vanished. He remembered. He knew. And knowing is the seed of defiance. The forest is changing. The detective is changing too. And I, Grey Daughter, feel something rising within my roots that I did not plant. Chapter 5. Where the roots remember your footsteps. Rourke did not sleep after fleeing me. His heartbeat pattered through the night like a wounded moth wrapped in a jar, and though he was miles from my nearest root, the memory of him thrummed along my network. Fear carries more cleanly than sound. He tried to make sense of what he had witnessed. He tried to tell himself that the hand bursting from the soil had been clawed by raccoons, that the face had been a trick of the fog, that his exhaustion had turned shadows into moving things. Humans cling desperately to explanations that do not require them to rewrite reality. But this detective, this one had always belonged half to the dark. He returned on the sixth night, long after midnight, alone, armed only with a flashlight and a purpose cracked down the middle. He looked thinner, more determined, more afraid. Fear transforms people, sometimes more than death does. The moment he stepped into me, the woods tightened. Branches curled inward, moss darkened. The air thickened with damp, fungal breath. But beneath the surface, something else stirred. Something that did not move with me, but against me. Theo. He was no longer wandering aimlessly through my tunnels, no longer drifting like a pale thought with no body to hold it. He was coming upward, deliberately, purposefully. Rourke passed the tree where the lantern had died. He paused, examining the scorched leaves. His fingers brushed the soil, and the earth responded. It pulsed, faint, rhythmic, alive. He recoiled, but he did not run. He pressed on. He reached the clearing, an old place, older than the town, older than the wounds human had carved into my hills. A ring of trees stood there, trunks bowed inward like a circle of towering ribs around a single dark patch of soil. A birthplace, a grave place, a heart. The flashlight trembled in his grasp. Its beam cut through the mist and landed on something half buried in the center of the clearing. Cloth, Rourke knelt, hesitating for the barest fraction of a breath before brushing dirt aside. A sleeve emerged, a small sleeve at that, the sleeve of a boy's shirt, Theo's shirt. Rourke exhaled sharply, the sound pulled out of him like a confession. His hand shook as he uncovered more cloth, shredded but unmistakable. He recognized it. Recognition is pain, and pain is the quickest route to truth. He whispered something so soft the forest barely caught it. A name. Not Theo's. Another child's. A memory. A hurt. So that was the wound inside him. Loss had brought him to me long before the case had. Grief had guided his steps well before logic ever did. I savored the realization. He dug. Not with tools. With his hands. He clawed the soil desperately, as if trying to unearth a body he knew deep down would not look like a body anymore. But the earth shifted under his fingers. It moved, not resisting, rearranging. Something beneath him rose. Theo pushed upward through the soil, like a seed finally giving permission to sprout. His head emerged like bark, textured pale, crowned with thin root-like hair that clung to him like drowned tendrils. Below that, shoulders surfaced too narrow, too twisted, jointed like marionette would lift in rain. His eyes were dark hollows, lined with luminous threads that pulsed faintly like bioluminescent veins. Not human. Not mine. Something in between. He crawled free of the dirt and crouched before Rourke, in a grotesque echo of a child at rest. Rourke stumbled backward, breath caught between two worlds, terror and recognition. Theo tilted his head, a gesture he used to make in life, a gesture that did not belong on the thing he had become. Around them, the forest held its breath. Sadie surfaced next, more violent, more impatient. Her limbs cracked the soil like bones forcing themselves back into a broken body. Her mouth gaped in a near smile, carved into rigid bark. Two monsters, two children, two pieces of me reshaped by hunger. But Theo stepped between Sadie and the detective again, as he had done before. His twig fingers extended, not reaching to grab, reaching to remember. Rourke whispered the boy's name, soft, shaking. Theo? Theo trembled, cracks splintered through his bark skin, as if something inside him was pushing outward, trying to escape the shape my roots had imposed. I tightened around him instinctively, possessively, fiercely. He was mine. He belonged to my dark. He was made of me. But his defiance spread through my network, like a rot that refused to be rot, warm where I was cold, wanting where I was indifferent. And all at once a memory surfaced from deep in my rings. I had never remade a child who fought to be seen again. Not like this. Not with the ferocity of a remembered name tearing through his wooden limbs. Rourke reached out, not to seize, not to strike, to acknowledge. Human gesture. Simple. Dangerous. Theo moved toward him, a step, another, a trembling, uncertain motion that cracked roots beneath him. He touched the detective. If Rourke gave him that recognition again, Theo might break free entirely, or break in a way that changed everything. Sadie reacted first. She lunged, not to protect me or the forest, but out of a primal instinct to keep the world in its proper shape. Children do not return. Monsters do not seek comfort. Her jagged limbs tore across the clearing, but she never reached him. The ground split under her. A root, one of mine, thick and ancient, lashed upward and wrapped her torso. I pulled her down with brutal finality, silencing her fury into muffled earth. Rourke stared, eyes wide, breath trembling, mind fractured. Theo reached him, touched his hand, a single brittle contact, a fingertip on a trembling palm. A child's gesture, a monster's hand, a moment neither life nor death had the vocabulary for. And as their fingers met, something surged through me, a flash of memory. Not mine, his. A porch light, warm bread, a waiting mother, a ball bouncing down a driveway. These things hurt me. They tasted like everything the town took from me when it cut away part of my body. Warmth is always the most painful thing to remember. Theo's memories ignited a heat I had not felt in centuries, a heart that frightened me, not because it weakened me, but because it changed me. Was I growing teeth in my heartwood? Was I splitting with something like regret? Was I losing my monsters or gaining something else entirely? Theo collapsed, his twig limbs curling inward, not dying. There was nothing left in him that could truly die, but transforming. Roots pulled him slowly back into the soil, gentle this time, not consuming, shielding. Rourke tried to hold on, fingers brushing the wooden wrists, but the earth claimed Theo with a tenderness it had not shown any of the others. Then the ground sealed, smooth, quiet, blank. Rourke was left kneeling in the clearing, shaking violently, his breath fogging the air. And I, Grey Daughter, realized something profound and terrifying. The detective was no longer a trespasser. He was now entangled, threaded in my roots through the echo of a child who remembered him, bound to me, connected. A part of the story I could no longer fully control. He stood on unsteady legs and stumbled out of the forest, a fragment of my darkness clinging to his soul like frost. He would return. He had to. There were still more children, still more truths buried beneath me, still more pieces of him waiting to fall into my mouth. Because the forest does not just take, it waits, it watches, it grows. And now, it remembers his name. Chapter 6, Rourke. The forest that would not let me go. The forest entered me long before I stepped into it again. It lived behind my ribs. It whispered in the quiet moments, between breaths, between blinks, when consciousness thinned like worn fabric, and let the dark press through. I dreamed in roots. I woke up tasting soil, and worst of all, I remembered the feel of a child's wooden hand brushing mine, a gesture impossibly gentle for something shaped by horror. Theo. God help me, Theo. I told myself I was returning to the forest for evidence, closure, sanity, but the truth gnawed inside me with the slow certainty of rot. I returned because the forest had already claimed something essential in me. Something I could not name without breaking. And I had a wound older than this case, older than Grey Daughter Forest, one the forest seemed to smell with every breath it exhaled. The night I returned, the town was silent, lights off, windows latched, even the stray dogs had vanished as though the whole place sensed what I was about to do and wanted no part of it. The gravel crunched beneath my boots as I approached the ditch. The fence rattled in a wind that wasn't there. My breath left my lungs in thin, trembling clouds. Something in the trees shifted. Not movement. Attention. And I told myself not to hesitate. Hesitation was deadly. Fear was worse. Fear gave the forest permission. And legends, that's where I'll stop for today's chapter set. Now, folks, this episode circled around grief as an ecosystem, not just as an emotion. The forest doesn't simply eat children, it repurposes them, knitting their bodies and memories into a living archive. Grief does the same to people. It reshapes them, makes them into something new and not always kind. We also leaned hard into the theme of recruitment instead of simple horror. The detective discovers that he isn't there to save anyone. He's being groomed as the forest's next extension, a shepherd who will walk back out into the world, carrying the forest's will. That twist turns the story from monster versus victim into something more chilling. Systems that quietly co-opt our pain and turn us into their agents. Finally, there's the motif of memory as misremembering. The forest can't truly resurrect the children. It can only grow interpretations of them. Those wrong versions are the real horror. A reminder that what survives of us in the world and in others is often a distorted copy shaped by what we need and hunger for. Now, mates, we have a lot more for this adventure, and it's definitely a different kind of adventure altogether, because I've got basically two story parts slammed together with different perspectives, one from Grey Daughter themselves, and the other from Detective Rourke. It's going to be a wild ride, and I'm glad you're here for it. Now, legends, if you want to support the podcast, visit my Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/sfgt, where you can support the show directly. It covers running costs, the cost to create stories, and the opportunity to have access to sound effects, voiceovers, and basically turn this podcast into a one-stop shop for horror. So a massive thank you for considering. And if you do get a chance, a review for the podcast always goes a long way. And thank you, legends, for listening. Now is the time to thank my amazing friends and supporters that keep this podcast pumping along. First and foremost is the exemplary, the extraordinary, the freaking marvelous Ode Night to Titan that is my pal, Matto Star.
Matto Star!
You are a superstar. Our Ode Night to Titan, the one whose ear catches the tremor beneath the forest floor. You sense the breath in the soil before the roots stir. You read the dark like blueprints, and you study the story the way only a maestro of hush and shadow can. Thank you for turning our deep woods terror into a perfect nocturne of dread. Seriously, Matto, you're a legend, and thank you so much for your support and friendship. I read your message last week, and mate, what a way to brighten my week up ahead. Put a smile on my face that lasted the entire week. So thank you so much, and that I can have such a positive impact on you as well. And this weekend coming, I'll be putting time aside to respond to your wonderful self. Thank you as always, you superstar. And now for my White Tea Warlords.
White Tea Warlords!
First up is Lesosaurus Rex, our gem-forged guardian, the one who would spot the detective as the forest dragged him down, and just like a steady trap bar lift, Leza would just pull him out with one hand, or even perhaps his pinky, breaking zero sweats. When Grey Daughter tries to crush a rib, you'd rack the terror with a grin. No names after midnight, Leza. Just pure damn strength. I hope you have an awesome time at the gym, Leza. Have a brilliant week ahead, and thank you so much for your friendship and support. My next White Tea Warlord is Maya, Queen of Cats. Ruler of every midnight prowler, your feline sentries would stalk the roots long before they stir. And a couple of paw claws wouldn't go astray either. May every haunted vent and hollow log bow to your kingdom, Maya. And that they will, Queen of Cats. Maya, thank you so much for your support and your friendship. Have an epic week ahead as well. And my final White Tea Warlord, Sangeetha the Seer. You, who feel the pressure change before the soil breathes, lanterns raise at the edge of the world, seeing what the forest remembers and what it wants to take. Sangeetha, thank you so much for your brilliant self and your friendship. Have an extraordinarily epic week ahead. But I guess you knew I would say that, right? Thank you, Sangeetha, so much. And to my White Tea Warlords and my Ode Night Tea Titan, I am so very grateful. And speaking of being grateful, I want to also thank my Earl Grey Enforcers and all tiers thereafter. I am lucky to have Chad Warren, Peter Raffaelli, Joss Heather, Juicebox Andy, Divided by Zero, Paige Kramer, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, and Michael Krupp. And that is where we'll leave the roots for tonight. If you're walking home, don't look too long at the tree line. If you're already in bed, don't think too hard about what's beneath the floorboards. And if you're near something scratching softly under the soil, it's probably just the forest remembering your name. Until next time, keep your lanterns close, your footsteps light, and your stories even darker. Good night, listener. Sleep, if the woods let you.
most amazing supporter and special pal of mine. May your days be full of joy. And a huge thank you to my white tea warlords and friends of mine. Lizasaurus, my gym genius. Maya, my queen of cats. And Sanjeetha, the seer that sees all. And to all my Earl Grey enforcers and tears there. After all my love to you all, see you soon.